This is a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts.
The Hendon Habit. The Edwardian Age is often depicted as a period of rest after the drive and activity of the Victorian Age, the calm before the storm of the First World War, a time of genteel weekends at country houses, social events such as Ascot, Henley and Cowes, an endless summer. The years 1901 to 1918, however, saw a considerable amount of change and innovation in most areas of life, socially, politically, in the sciences and the arts. You have the suffrage movement for both men and women, in the field of philosophy, the work of Bertrand Russell, in the arts, the music of Elgar, the writings of D.H. Lawrence, H.G. Wells, and the art of the Bloomsbury Group. Challenges to the old order were being made. There were huge developments in technology too. You have the motor car, and of course innovations relating to aviation were taking place. In 1903, the Wright brothers undertook the first powered flight. On the 16th of October 1908, Samuel Cody flew the first powered flight in Britain. Viscount Northcliffe, the owner of the Daily Mail newspaper, was struck by the potential for aircraft and became convinced that aerial power will be an even more important thing than sea power. He described the aeroplane as the motor car of the air. As early as 1909, you had the start of what was to become a long tradition of the Daily Mail sponsoring and offering cash prizes for feats in aviation. The historic flight of Blériot, flying across the Channel for the first time, came about because of the competition run by the newspaper. Viscount Northcliffe's eye was also on the circulation of his newspaper and the number of copies sold. He aimed to create sensation, to capture public interest, and portrayed these races as jewels in the air. An example of this was the first London to Manchester air race, the two cities, incidentally, in which the newspaper was printed. There was a prize of £10,000 for the winner. The flight took place in 1910 and became a race hotly contested between Claude Graham-White and the French airman Louis Pollen. Claude Graham-White eventually lost the race but gained huge celebrity, mainly because his attempt had involved a dangerous, daring night flight which caught the imagination. Graham-White has been described as early flying's greatest and most up-to-date promoter and showman. He was instrumental in the development of Hendon as London's first aerodrome, and was part of the syndicate which purchased 207 acres of land. For in 1910, the site now occupied by the Royal Air Force Museum, London, and the surrounding area, was just green fields. Work began with hangars being built and flying schools established, such as the Blériot School of Flying and Graham-White School. Claude Graham-White established a working relationship with Viscount Northcliffe. They shared a vision for the potential for aircraft in a military capacity, and both men had a business showmanship acumen. Demonstrations were held at Hendon for members of Parliament, and in 1912 they worked together on the Wake Up England campaign, which involved pilots associated with the schools flying aircraft to different resorts around the country, demonstrating the aircraft and highlighting their potential. Other aerodromes, closely linked with Britain's earliest flights, such as Brooklands and Eastchurch, were already holding aviation meetings, and Graham-White wanted to develop Hendon along similar lines as a premier venue to place Hendon on the social calendar alongside Ascot and Henley. Graham-White was an aggressive promoter, and the Hendon Habit was encouraged. The proximity of Hendon to central London and its good accessibility via road, rail and the underground soon paid off. Big draw events were organised, such as the Aerial Derby, the first being held on the 8th of June 1912, sponsored by the Daily Mail. It was an 81-mile circuit route around London, and more than 45,000 people watched the event at the starting point at Hendon, with 500,000 people watching around London. From 1912, a regular season of display flying at Hendon was developed. The organisers wanted to eclipsed previous efforts to interest the public in the cause of aviation. The inauguration of weekly flying created a busy calendar for Graham White's aerodrome, with 30 to 50 meetings a year. Fixtures took place between February and November, weather permitting, although the large number of flying schools on site meant that pilots could be seen in the air on most days. The weekly meets took place on Saturday afternoons, and prominent flyers were invited to take part in exhibition flights, speed handicaps, and aerial races. Prizes and trophies were donated by several newspapers, as well as by many leading companies such as Shell and Mappin & Webb. Events usually began at around 3 p.m, with crowds gathering shortly beforehand. There were a number of travel options available to visitors. They could arrive by tram or motor bus, on foot, by taxicab, or for the well-off, by motor car. Although the underground was in existence at this time, there was no stop near the aerodrome. On arrival, visitors purchased their tickets at the gate and took their place in one of the enclosures lining the race course. Six pennies bought you standing room in the sixpence enclosure by the refreshments pavilion. For 1 shilling, you could take a grandstand seat in the shilling enclosure, and for the wealthy, the half-crown paddock enclosure was close to the action and had room for the motor car. Avid aviation fans could purchase a season ticket, 2 guineas for gentlemen and £1.11.6 for ladies. This admitted holders to a special railed enclosure. A fully illustrated programme was on sale for tuppence, in which visitors could note down the results of each race. These programmes also contained interesting articles, for example, The Evolution of the Monoplane and How an Airman Finds His Way, all designed to pique interest in aviation. Visitors could also read profiles of their favourite aviators, a different pilot every week, and of course the details of the next aviation meet at the London Aerodrome. The commencement and finish of the event's programme was signalled by the firing of 3 bombs. Between races, visitors could relax in the restaurant or the visitors' pavilion and enjoy the sounds of the military band playing a selection of popular tunes. The public were invited to take passenger flights and experience the thrill of aviation themselves. At 2 guineas for 2 circuits, this thrill did not come cheap, but it was definitely an experience to be remembered, as described by one passenger. Once the ascent began, the sensation seemed almost impossible to put into ordinary commonplace words. The wind seemed remarkably strong, especially when the machine turned, but it was the most exhilarating to feel it rushing past and to think how even the elements could be conquered by man. A full-time press agent, Bernard Isaacs, was appointed, and a permanent press club, complete with a bar, was erected in order to ensure maximum press coverage for the events. The racing itself took place in the centre of the aerodrome on a specially marked out course, with 6 large pylons set out in hexagonal shape for the pilots to navigate around. Prior to the start of each race, a black inverted cone was hoisted at pylon number 1. After the race had started, a black ball was hoisted in addition to the cone, indicating that a race was in progress. And at the end of a race, the cone was hauled down, leaving the ball to signal that results would soon appear on the events board. Results were also announced by megaphone. The ringing of a bell announced the start of each event, at which point the crowds would gather in the enclosures to watch the pilots line up, engines running at the start line. On the dropping of a white flag, the race was on, and the aircraft leapt into action. The speed handicap races were open to all types of aeroplane, handicapped so that the slowest aircraft started first. Pilots would battle it out over 8 laps of the pylon course, jostling to win the prize of a trophy and 20 sovereigns. If a pilot fouled a pylon, a black and white flag was waved at the 2 succeeding pylons, signalling the competitor to return and pass the pylon properly or face disqualification. As each competitor completed the course, a green flag was waved and pilots could land and claim their prize. As well as the speed handicaps, there were cross-country races that started and finished at the aerodrome. The course was typically 15 to 20 miles long and could be pretty grueling if the weather was poor. In addition, there were altitude contests and bomb-dropping competitions. Occasionally there was a quick starting competition, where the winner was the pilot to leave the ground in the shortest distance from the start, and an alighting competition where pilots had to land as closely as possible to a designated mark. Besides the weekly aviation meetings, there were special events throughout the year aimed at promoting aviation to as wide an audience as possible. The Aerial Derby became the social event of the year. The aerodrome also hosted an annual Ladies' Day where female aviators were the stars of the show, as well as other themed days to celebrate occasions like Empire Day. However, by far the most popular flying event at London Aerodrome was the Grand Illuminated Night Flying and Fireworks Display. For this, the aerodrome and aircraft were decorated with electric lamps. Once in flight, powerful searchlights illuminated the flyers as they performed various manoeuvres in the dark. The event was rounded off with an impressive firework display to the delight of the visitors, but not, it seems, to the local people of Hendon. One newspaper reported that the singing and chatter in the streets and the roar of the omnibuses as thousands of strangers passed up and down the thoroughfares until nearly midnight was deafening. In general, though, the many and varied aviation meetings had become the social events, equivalent of Ascot and Henley, that Graham White hoped they would be, with more than 1 million people a year acquiring the Hendon habit. The shows attracted the rich and the famous, and the pioneer aviators themselves became celebrities, appearing on postcards and in autograph books, newspapers and magazines. So, what of the men themselves providing the entertainment for the crowds? Hendon's pioneer aviators were a close-knit community of international aviation enthusiasts. They pushed the boundaries of aviation, accomplishing feats that would become the mainstay of air shows for years to come. The intense rivalry belied a deep camaraderie that extended across nationality and gender. It is impossible to choose any one pioneer above the others, but I'd like to highlight a few who created a name for themselves at Hendon. Gustav Hamel is one of the most famous pilots of early aviation history. He was a regular on the Hendon circuit and was respected and admired by the public and his fellow pilots alike. Hamel is best known for flying the first official airmail between Hendon and Windsor on the 9th of September 1911. He completed the 21-mile journey in a record 10 minutes and even managed to write a postcard on the way. Among his other feats, Hamel crossed the Channel more often than any other pilot at the time, including the first with a female passenger. Hamel was an exceptionally skilled pilot and seen by many as Britain's most dashing aviator. Visitors to Hendon were always assured of a magnificent performance if Hamel was flying. His disappearance over the English Channel on the 23rd of May 1914 was a great loss for aviation, and the crowds at Hendon mourned their idol. The strength of good feeling towards Gustav Hamel was summed up in a report in the Flight magazine. His loss is one that is well-nigh irreparable to British aviation, for without doubt he was one of our best aviators. We have to deplore the passing from amongst us of a man of singular charm and manner, modest in spite of his great achievements, and one who had made hosts of friends. B.C. Benny Hux was taught to fly by Claude Graham White and later became his chief mechanic. As a pilot, he had much flying experience, having toured America with Graham White. Above all, he possessed nerve and excellent judgment. Although Hux did not set out to become a trick flyer, his aerial stunts are what earned him his fame. He was the first British pilot to successfully loop the loop in a specially strengthened Blériot. Graham White arranged an upside-down dinner in honour of this feat where the courses were served back to front. Hux was renowned as an eminently safe pilot who had the skill to fly in any condition short of a hurricane. However, he is perhaps best remembered for inventing the aerial engine starter that bears his name, an example of which is on display at the RAF Museum London site in the Graham White building. During the 1910s, Tom Sopwith was a regular and popular sight at the Hendon meetings. His passion for aircraft and flying dated from 1910, when he learnt to fly at Brooklands and bought his first aircraft. Alarmed at the rate he was spending money on his new interest, he decided to make flying pay by winning prizes, and this he proceeded to do. He was the winner in his 70-horsepower Blériot aircraft of the first aerial derby in June 1912. After being chaired by his fellow aviators and supporters, he was presented with a Daily Mail Gold Cup and £250 cash. He was unfortunately unable to defend his win at the second Derby in 1913, as he had already set up his own manufacturing company by this point, and so was represented by his chief pilot, Hawker. Sir Thomas Sopwith went on to become a giant within the British aircraft manufacturing industry, creator of such iconic aircraft such as the Sopwith Camel, Pup and Tabloid, examples of which are on display at the RAF Museum London site. He had an extraordinary career in aviation and lived until he was 101. Marcel de Sutter came over from France to learn at the Blériot School of Flying. He was soon recognised as being an excellent pilot, with a sound understanding of the subject. Though only 18 years old, de Sutter was noticed by Richard Gates, who offered him a job with the Graham White Aviation Company. Despite his youth, he was ranked amongst the top pilots of the day and won numerous prizes at the weekly Hendon race meetings, frequently delighting the crowds. The correspondent for the magazine Flight, reporting on flying at Hendon in August 1912, described how de Sutter, in his 50-horsepower, known Blériot aircraft, flew alongside the enclosures some 15 to 20 feet high, and from time to time he raised both hands above his head, surely unnecessary, but the spectators seemed to appreciate it and signified their approval enthusiastically. De Sutter's career was almost cut short when, following a serious accident, he lost his leg as a result of tetanus. Soon after his accident, a benefit fund was organised by his fellow aviators, including Sopwith. However, de Sutter was far from deterred, and he manufactured the first aluminium prosthetic leg and was able to continue flying. Certainly with such fame came great risks, and many of the pioneers were injured or killed in the pursuit of aviation. As the First World War loomed, the aviators faced the challenge of fighting for their country. Among those joining Britain's air forces were Claude Graham White, his long-term friend and business manager Richard Gates, and Lieutenant J.C. Port. As for Hendon, with war looming, the Admiralty took over the site during 1914, and No. 2 Aircraft Acceptance Park was set up to take delivery of aircraft from the many local factories, including the Graham White Company, which expanded greatly during this time. The surrounding area went on to become a centre of aircraft production during the First World War. 8,000 aircraft out of the 55,000 used by the British Armed Services in the conflict were built locally. The flying schools focused on the training of military personnel, and, with a ban on civil flying coming into effect, the pageant ceased at Hendon, with the last display in the country taking place on the 3rd of August 1914.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.